on this episode of Rebel Spirit Radio.
It's about the collective energy of the love that's within us. This frequency is a field. This frequency of love within me, this frequency of love within you, this frequency of love that's within everybody listening is an actual field. And everything we do, everything we say, every thought we hold, which is frequency, informs the field. So when we are in low vibration, and we all are, any teacher that tells anyone listening, I am so enlightened, I never experienced judgment, run in the other direction. Because in my experience, they'd be off the planet. You know, they'd be off the planet because they're so evolved. They have nothing else to learn here. This is our learning place. So everything we do say and experience is in the field.
Welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio, exploring the frontiers of spirituality, consciousness, the esoteric, and humanity's sacred relationship with a living earth. I'm your host, Nick Mather, and in this episode, I'm joined by author Selena Maitreya to discuss her book, Raise Your Frequency, Transform Your Life. Selena shares her spiritual journey from receiving her name at 16, overcoming addiction, surviving a major car accident, and rediscovering spirituality. We explore themes of resilience, energy management, and personal growth, emphasizing the power of high-frequency energy and conscious choice. Also, please be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. Your support is truly appreciated. Selena Maitreya is a lecturer, author, and spiritual teacher. The creator of Clarion Call, an online conference of spiritual teachers, she is a founding member of the Manhattan Holistic Chamber of Commerce and a past board member of the Boston Theosophical Society. She joins me today to discuss her book, Raise Your Frequency, Transform Your Life. Selena, welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio.
Hey, thanks, Nick. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, I am very happy that you're joining me today. I think we have a lot to talk about. Mm-hmm. I've got some questions for you about your book. But first, I thought that maybe a good place to start might be with your journey, kind of your spiritual journey. And you had a pretty major accident, too, that you used your teachings to kind of pull yourself out of it and to move forward. So I thought that might be a good place to start.
Well, thanks. Let's start at the beginning. My name, Selena Maitreya, was given to me when I was a 16-year-old, unformed, dishonest, unhappy person. I met a teacher through a series of, obviously, at this point in my life, I recognize divinely guided events. And she gave me that name along with this symbol that I wear, which stands, it's a visual acronym for oneness. Selena, she told me, meant daughter of the moon and mistress of the stars, which I found incredibly romantic and I loved. Did not take the name of Maitreya until 30 years later, because Maitreya is indeed a disembodied master. I loved the philosophy, very simple. We are not in competition with each other. Maitreya says we are one and one is three. We are here to cooperate and be of service to each other, which kind of actually, Nick, reminds me of the Japanese cultural experience of filling a sake cup. There's the idea that when you drink sake with another, that neither of you should fill your own cup, that if I'm watching out for you, Nick, and you're watching out for my cup, our cups are always filled, and they're filled by the other person watching out. So I loved that philosophy even back then. Life moved forward after I worked with this teacher in New Orleans, and as I grew older, I put my spirituality on a shelf for a while, and then in my late 20s, I found myself addicted to cocaine, and I got sober in my late 20s, and went into therapy for 12 years to understand who I was and what was going on. And during that time, through the work I was doing as a consultant to commercial photographers around the world, I was introduced to my new spiritual teacher. And that was in my late 30s, early 40s. I'm now 69. So I've worked with that teacher, the Reverend Janice Hope Gorman, brilliant woman, for the last 25 plus years. It was in working with Hope that I learned how to take the principles I had been reading about in books, that I had been studying various philosophies and practices through workshops I had gone to, but with hope, I learned how to embody them, how to actually use specific practices in my life, which dramatically changed my life. So you find me in my early 50s, divorced with two boys. I became primarily financially responsible for my boys. My career was booming. I had written two books as a consultant to photographers. I was lecturing all around the country over 150 times in 10 years, teaching for photographers. But I was also at that point a deep spiritual student. So at the same time that I was very active in the third dimensional world and I was really a type A person, my life was filled so much with responsibilities and the work I loved and taking care of my kids, cooking dinner every night. I couldn't really teach a whole lot, but I had been channeling for years. The third time that I sat with hope, spirit started to speak through me. And as the years went on, as a mom and a consultant, I had this burning desire to teach. And source kept saying, when your boys are grown, you'll sell your house, you'll move on, you'll be a teacher. So that time came. 2013 arrived. My boys were in relationship with the women they're now married to. One kid was in grad school, another halfway through college. My responsibilities in 2013 were done, and it was time to sell our house. So I put the house on the market. I had a plan with my accountant. I was making more money than I ever had. I was in a great place to send my kids into the world, move off on my own, and finally develop a savings account because I used every penny I earned to send them to college to keep them in their home. And it was magnificent. I was moving to New York City where I had been born, and I wanted to go back and see it as an adult with financial means and be able to be a teacher and have a relationship, a romantic relationship. And I was 2 days from closing on my house. And I was driving there for the very, very last time to clean it. And within days, I was going to take my first vacation in 8 years and then show up in New York with a wad of money and become a teacher and move forward in that part of my life. So I was driving across a road I'd been on for thousands of times, probably in the last 20 years. Excuse me. And a woman ran a red light. And I had an Audi convertible and she had a van and she T-boned me right in the driver door. So the experience for me was that I didn't see anything coming and an incredible light hit the car. Spirit talked to me, told me what was happening. I became unconscious and I was introduced to oneness. I was in oneness. And then the rest of my life changed from there. So just a little bit of a little long story there, but that would be the trajectory.
Yeah, well, thank you for sharing that. I'm curious because you used, and this is something that impressed me in the book, is the teachings that are in the book, you use those after the accident because it was not something that it seems like you thought that. I think most people would, I don't want to say necessarily give up, but that would be a major block for them, that it was something that happened to them and maybe that there was no reason for it. But you took a different approach, that there was a teaching there for you.
Exactly. First of all, I'm going to let you know that for me, words are very intentional. And Spirit told me in the car, because I'm a channel, they channeled through and they told me this was an event. It was not an accident. This was an event that they had created in order to take me out of my life and be able to restructure my frequencies so that I could go back into the world and be a teacher at the level I was meant to be. I had already had, Nick, 15 years before this of teachings that I had been walking through the world as a being who had embodied spiritual practices. So when this event happened, and I'd been channeling, even though I couldn't be a teacher full time, I had students, I'd been giving lectures at local spiritual centers, I'd been writing articles, I created clarion call for other spiritual teachers to come on and share with each other. All of that was done before this had happened. So when the event happened, and it was a major brain injury that I sustained, I left the car. They told me I'd leave the car with no broken bones or bruises, and I didn't. And so everyone thought it was a miracle until 3 days later when I couldn't walk down a hallway. And my neurologist told me this would get a lot worse before it got better, and it did. So I landed in New York totally impaired. I couldn't go take trains. I couldn't go to restaurants. I couldn't go out my door without great difficulty. I couldn't take a shower without a great difficulty. I had cooked dinner every night for my kids for 15 years as a single parent, and before that, when I was married to their dad. And I remember standing in my kitchen in Chelsea when I landed in New York City, and I was holding an egg in one hand and a frying pan in another, and I knew they had something to do with each other, but I didn't know what they did. So that's really how bad I was. But I was gifted with the work I had done before, and I had then, and now even more so, a very consistent relationship with the divine. So there was no question when they told me in the car, Nick, that they had me covered, that this would be a difficult time for me, but I was not to be concerned or worried because they would take care of everything that needed to be taken care of, because I had no savings account at this point. I had just intended to move to New York. I had a very big client roster. I knew that would sustain me. I had contracts to fulfill, and then I was going to be a teacher. So that was the plan. But now it was all gone. And they said not to worry, that my job was to completely surrender. And in that moment, I did. So that's
Wonderful.
the answer to the question. I had been
Yeah.
primed. Source,
Right.
in my experience, Nick, never comes in and gives us, as maybe the Bible says, I believe, more than we can handle. And I was fully prepared by them for this experience, although I didn't know that at the time. I just knew that my job was to surrender. I had no idea what that meant, but I had trust and I had faith.
Okay. You've mentioned several things that I want to talk about in terms of, but I think that maybe a good place to start is, and this goes to the title of the book about raising your frequency. And I'm curious, what do you mean by that?
So, in order to answer that question, I'm going to take a little step back. So,
Sure.
when we look at Selena or we look at Nick, most of the time when we refer to ourselves, we refer to ourselves, and everybody listening probably does the same thing. You're all referring to yourself as we do, as me or I, a one-dimensional being. But we're not one dimension. We are several moving parts. So here with Selena is a physical body, one manifestation. I have a physical brain, another manifestation. I have a personality that's been developed in my lifetime, third manifestation. I have an emotional body, four. I have a history in this body, five. And then I have energy fields, as do you and do us all. I have a low frequency, the egoic energy, the energy of pain. And then I have the high frequency of love that we all experience. Now, each of us have different bodies, different personalities, different histories, different pain, but the one consistent frequency, the one part, one manifestation rather, that we all share is this high frequency of love, because that is our source energy. That is the soul level that comes into this body to correct itself or to shift something. That's why it wants a physical experience. That high energy of love, we all have. That is the only commonality we all have. And so we have frequencies within our body. Science measures the frequencies of the brain and the heart. It's the EKG, the EEG. On the end of life, some people are on a monitor that measures what? It measures the frequency in their entire body. And when that's gone, they're proclaimed deceased. So we have these energies. Science is proving this. Neuroscience is coming in and talking about it. What I'm teaching people how to do is to utilize them while we're alive and while we're here and can make changes.
Right. Yeah. And I usually use just the language of energies, but I think frequency is also a good synonym for it, I suppose.
And Nick, can I
Yeah.
just jump in for a
Yeah.
sec?
Yeah,
I
please.
also want to say to that point, because I think people can relate to this. When we're babies, before we learn language, regardless of our culture, The only language we have is frequency, is energy. As babies, when we want to communicate, we cry. So our history of connecting pain to communication goes back to when we're babies. Our way of communicating through frequency goes back way before we had the language of words. And we forgot that with our conditioning because we're not educated. Society, our parents don't educate us in regards to frequency. When we became speakers of a language, when we communicated through language, we forgot about frequency, but it is still within us to activate.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so many people, I think, just see matter, you know, that it's just a material world. Yeah. And don't necessarily recognize the energetic, the frequency aspect to things. And I, you know, I can speak out of personal experience. A few years ago, I was in a pretty bad place, both physically, but also mentally. And it was manifesting in my body. I couldn't sit down without it hurting. I mean, that's really difficult to not be able to sit. And I spoke with a psychic, and that came highly recommended by one of my former guests. And she was, her language is like, your energy. And, you know, I took a different path in terms of how to heal that energy, but I am totally on board with how these energies can affect us. They can affect us physically and everything else in our lives. And there are blockages, and we create a lot of our own blockages.
Yes, we do. I have a practice that I love, Spirit loves to take students through. It's called a chakra cleanse. And it's like no other practice I've ever seen, where we go through each of the first seven chakras and clear them not only from foreign energy, because we pick up energy from everywhere, but also we release the low frequency energy that we've created from all of the actions, words, thoughts, everything we do that doesn't serve our highest good and the highest good for all. And energy is everything. Energy is the foundation of absolutely everything, because matter is energy. I mean, science, Einstein talks about, you know, how energy makes up everything that we're sitting on. Everything that we see in the physical world is matter that's compressed. It's energy that's compressed into matter. And so to be able to work with our frequencies is huge. Science also says that the brain does not create anew. What the brain does as a function is it recognizes that which it knows and creates structure around it. Well, that which the brain recognizes is energy, frequency. And if we're in low frequency, it creates structure, which are thoughts and emotions around that particular frequency. And if we're in high frequency, we're feeling open, we're feeling, you know, we're open to receive, we're feeling bountiful, then the brain is going to create thoughts and emotions. That's the structure around that. So where New Age is telling us, change your thoughts to change your life, that's fine, that's helpful. But the thought is the form the brain creates after it recognizes frequency. I teach people how to change their frequency so the brain can create different thoughts and emotions. And it's so much easier to change our frequency than to at the base and to give the brain something different that we want it to create thoughts around, rather than trying to create what's already in form, because the third dimensional world is so dense. So when we create at the frequency level, we have a much easier time.
Yeah. And I suppose that that leads to the question of, well, how do you change your frequency?
And that, my friend, is an excellent question. And it requires certain steps. The first step it requires, because as you and I have said, we are not trained around frequencies. Nobody educates us there, except for the teachers that are now coming along, like myself, who all have different ways of doing it. We're not taught that in school. We're not encouraged by our parents to, like, what's your frequency now? No, it's like, what were you thinking? What were you feeling? Or your thoughts are so important and your feelings are so important. And they are, but for different reasons than I believe we're told. The first step is awareness. It's being able to move through the world, what I call witnessing as you be, watching and seeing what frequency you're in as you are there. Because if you're not able to witness as you be, then you're not able to know that you're in a frequency that needs to be shifted. It's that simple. So learning, and it is a learning, how to witness as you experience is step one. Step two is having the willingness, when you see that you need to make a shift, having the willingness to do that. And that is a big step, because right now, for most people, their thinking mind, their thoughts, and their emotions are guiding them. So if you're in the middle of an emotional surge, somebody's simple moment that we all experience, you're going into a building in a city and somebody, you're right up to the door and somebody doesn't hold it for you. That doesn't feel very inviting to a lot of people. And a lot of people go, well, thank you. Right. They change their, they could be, you could be happy going into this building and then the door shuts in front of you. And your emotion changes in a nanosecond from feeling fine to feeling dissed to feeling, your ego jumps in and suddenly you feel, well, thanks so much for that. And you've shifted your energy without even noticing. And it's hard for people in those moments, in those emotional surges. And that's a small one. You get a big one, right? You go home at the end of the day, you're exhausted, you've been working hard, can't wait to see your partner, and your partner is just sitting there in front of the TV doing nothing. The house looks a mess and they're grumpy and you're grumpy. And you're not about to shift unless you really are have an opportunity and you're conscious enough to know that you can change your frequency. It's going to be very hard for you to want to change. So second step is a willingness to shift the frequency. And then the third is having a palette of tools, which is what I provide as a teacher, which is what's in my book, that actually will help you in a nanosecond to change your frequency. So it's awareness, it's willingness, it's knowing you have choice, it's willingness to shift with that awareness of choice, and then it's the use of actual steps that change your frequency.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for that. One of the things I liked about the book is, well, a couple of things. One is that this is a practice in a sense that you're constantly doing, and the responsibility is on the individual.
Yes.
And I think that's really crucial and important. And, one of the things that I had to learn as I was working through blockages and whatnot was that, like, little things would set me at noises. I was always very, very sensitive to noises. And if my neighbors next door, I could hear them, I would just get all the energy levels would be really rough. And
I
it was
think you
like,
and I are related, Nick.
yeah, maybe. But I had to, what I had to learn was I am responsible for my response, not them. I can't keep them quiet. I can't be responsible for how anyone else behaves. What I can do is I can be mindful of my own response. And learning that, I saw a massive shift in terms of energy.
What freedom that is. That
Yeah.
is freedom. That is personal freedom. Viktor Frankl, I'm sure you're familiar with his work. No, beautiful and an absolutely difficult life towards the middle part of his life and in his youth as a Holocaust survivor. But he was the person who really articulated that so beautifully when he said that when everything is taken away from us, the last piece of humanity that cannot be taken from us is our choice to respond to any situation. And I, of course, I'm probably ruining his beautiful quote, so people should go and see how he phrased it. He did it so beautifully. But that's freedom. When I discovered that, when you discovered that, Nick, wasn't that a sense of freedom? Wasn't that like, oh my God, it's not what people, it's not the situations that happen. It's our response to them. Spirit took that one step further when they channeled down through me once. And they said to me that the choice, when that our freedom comes from choice, and that it's our choice in how we respond that creates the next moment. Because they said when difficulty lands, that's one moment, that's one frequency that has landed in your world. Most of us are conditioned, Nick, to respond to whatever frequency lands in our world with the same frequency. It's just an automatic response we seem to have as humans. So when chaos lands, something small like your neighbors and the noise, or something large like my brain injury, or somebody losing a beloved, or their money, or their job, we tend to respond with the same frequency. And Spirit said, your next moment is created. This is how creation works in the physical world. Your next moment is created in the same frequency as your last moment. So if we're automatically responding to chaos with more chaos, and we don't choose to shift our frequency, then we're creating our next moment from chaotic energy. So we're continuing that flow of what's landed. So our freedom is in the awareness of, okay, chaos has landed. I have a choice here. I can choose to shift my frequency with one of the practices Selena's sharing and create my next moment from high frequency and have my next moment of creation come from love, or I can choose to stay in chaos as I create my next moment. So it's not only freeing, but it's a tool as to how we create our next moment. So when people are listening to this podcast, you guys, if you're finding that you're in a slump, if you're depressed, if you're anxious, if you're worried, and you look at your life and your responses, and you see that you are not shifting your frequency when things happen, because life brings us chaos. It brings us joy and love, but it brings us tons of worry and chaos. And when we take on the responsibility, which is what it is, which I love so much, the freedom of changing our energy once chaos lands, that's the juice. That's the gift that we're given as beings who have choice. We get to choose our frequency. So our next moment is created from that high frequency of love, which is abundant and plentiful.
Yeah,
that's what I love so much about it.
Yeah. Well, it feels like it's putting yourself into connection with however you want to, whatever language you want to refer to it as, a source or spirit or the divine, but allowing that connection to flow through, because it seems that when we're at that lower frequency, it can't, we've blocked it somehow. And I think that there are a number of ways that we block it. You mentioned conditioning, but we also condition ourselves through the stories that we tell.
You know, you've got so much there that I want to respond to. I mean, really, really brilliant comments. Whew, I want to go back.
Please feel free.
Yeah, I want to remember. Take me back to the very first point you were making. I got to tell you, 11 years later, my brain still has a hard time retaining a bunch of information. So you started with a beautiful point. Tell me what you were saying.
If I remember correctly, it was that it seems that when we are at the higher frequency, that we are connected with whatever you want to call it, source, the divine, spirit. But at the lower frequencies, it's blocked, that's not going through us, and that we kind of block ourselves in many ways through the stories we tell and the wording we use.
Absolutely. Good. Yeah. Thank you so very much for that, Nick. I really appreciate that. I want to share with everyone that when we came into when we were created, when we were born, this is what Source has shared with me a long time ago. We are source energy that comes into a body. The source energy, the soul energy, needs to make some sort of shift or correction. In oneness, where Source lives, where I was taken, where I go to all the time, I still have entree to oneness simply by closing my eyes. In oneness, there is nothing. I cannot use a word to even describe it except to say nothing. Nothing can be accomplished there because there is nothing. You are nothing. It is the most incredibly beyond peaceful place. So soul comes into body to create a shift because this is form. This is where everything is created. And at the same time that soul comes into body, we are given free will. And we hear about free will, but I can describe free will very simply as our choice to say yes or no to that divine energy that just came into body. And when we say yes to it, we are indeed activating it within us because those frequencies, remember, high and low frequencies are always within us. So that divine energy is the high energy, but we have to say yes to it in the material world. We have to choose to activate it. And when we are in experiencing chaos, like what you were describing about you being in pain sitting, or something happens like my brain injury and life is completely everything was taken away from me, absolutely everything. I had to rebuild my entire life. We have to choose in those moments, small and large, to activate the high frequency within us. So that's why it's not automatic, because we have to, in every moment of our day, invoke. And what does that mean? That means to choose a practice that energetically shifts us out of the pain. We have to recognize it. We have to actively choose, use our free will to shift it. And then we become it. Because in the third dimensional world, Nick, we can't go upstairs and down at the same time. You can't be in pain and healed at the same time. And we can't be in low frequency and high. So when we see it, we're aware of it with our you know, walking in awareness, and then we choose one of the practices to shift. As soon as we choose that practice, we activate that energy within us. We're no longer in that low frequency because we can't be in low and high. So as soon as we make that choice to activate it through one of the practices, we're done with it. We're out of it, and we're in high frequency. So that's one piece of what you shared. How do we get there, and how do we get out of it? It's got to be free will and choice. Secondly, you're right about stories. You're right about words. Words carry frequency, and the tone we use, that we wrap around words. I could say the same words to you. What were you thinking? That's wrapped in a tone of openness. I'm curious. I'm inquisitive. Or I could say, Nick, what were you thinking? That tone is closed. That tone is judgmental. So our words carry frequency and our tone does. Spirit shared with me. They said this one day. They said, you know, we look at those in form and it's so curious because we wonder, we see them repeating when something difficult happens. What do they tend to do? They run to everybody they can and they repeat that disrespect that happened, or they repeat what they've lost, or they repeat that pain. Don't they realize that they are their attention and what they put their attention on grows? Why do they choose to repeat that over and over and over? And I once again was taken to this place of such openness and possibility because it was true. So I teach people, when we are wanting to make shifts, we put our attention on the situation we wish to create, and we speak to ourselves, our teachers, and to the divine about that. We don't put our attention on what we're looking to leave behind. And that's why telling people stories of our pain does not serve. I have people that have ended friendships with me and I've ended with them because their idea of friendship is somebody who will confide in them all of their deepest, darkest secrets and pains. And I don't invest any time in my pain. I see it, I transform it moment to moment. And so that's not my idea of an ideal friendship because I choose not to put my energy into stories.
Yeah. I always find it curious, and I've done this in the past, you know, where
we all have, right?
We love the stories, and it's this constant cycle of telling the same story over and over and over. And the way I was thinking about this is not just the stories, but with the language, because you have in one section of the book, there's a little chart about changing the language, right?
I love
But
that.
yeah, the way I always think about it is our words are spells in many ways.
They
And
carry energy.
yeah, we have to be really mindful and just shifting things. The way we say things can have a profound impact. You know, one of the things that you wrote is you gave like two little phrases that can be used. Wouldn't it be nice? And isn't it curious?
They shift frequency. You know, you will almost never hear me say the word mindful because it is not a word that I think is accurate when we talk about spirituality, especially, and I find it so curious that people in the spiritual realm use it all the time, especially when they're talking about meditation, because meditation is anything but mindful. It's mindless. And so when we're working with frequencies, we're not working with the mind. We're not trying to have more mind. We're trying to have less mind. We're trying to have more frequency awareness. So I try not to use that word a lot, but you're absolutely right. The phrases, isn't that curious? And wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't it be nice was given to me by a past partner, a man I had been involved with years ago, was also a spiritual person. And he taught me the first, I thought it was brilliant. He taught me that phrase. He didn't have the background that I have, but spirit brought it back into my awareness later on in my teaching. The idea is that these are transformational tools. These are two of the practices you can use in that third step of what we spoke of. After you're aware that you're noticing as you notice as you be, as you witness as you be, that your energy needs to shift and you want to do it quickly, you might say to yourself, if you find yourself in judgment, which is what I continually work on, it's been 25 years, I've made great strides, but still within me, I see judgment all the time. And so when I see it, I transform it immediately. And one of the things I say is, isn't that curious? Why? Because judgment, when I say, oh, look, what were they thinking? They should be watching their child more closely. And I notice that oh, isn't that curious that I just said that they should be watching their child? As soon as I say, isn't that curious, I'm shifting the judgment. I'm in high frequency. And then I'll always say to myself, wouldn't it be nice if I could just remember that they're probably loving parents who are busy and at the moment, and that child will be safe. So they are transformational tools. They take us out of a moment of judgment. They take us out of a moment of criticizing ourselves or others or situations. So they're brilliant tools. And they are two phrases that people write to me the most about. Oh my God, Selena, I love the phrase, wouldn't that be, isn't that curious? I couldn't believe how I was shifted immediately and how I felt so differently when I used the phrase, you know, wouldn't it be nice? Because wouldn't it be nice comes in when we're asking for something different, because it's a proclamation that we want something different. And so as soon as we say those phrases, once we notice we're out of alignment with love, it shifts us back in and activates the frequency.
And when I use the phrase mindfulness, I think, or mindful, I think it is more along the lines of when you talk about awareness and just be, excuse me, being aware of things, because I think that it's difficult sometimes because you have to kind of catch yourself. But if you're aware of what you're doing, it's a little bit easier.
And so I would say, and this isn't me correcting you, nor was I before, but for me, once again, I take words seriously. So let's look at that if you don't mind. So what are we being aware of? We're not aware of the mind, we're aware of the frequencies. So if I want to be aware of my frequency, it's not for me. And this is just me. And people say, oh, you're splitting words. No, words have frequency, right? So I like to be aware. I want to remind myself to be aware of my frequency. So it's okay, Selena, where's your frequency? Where's your energy? You know, where is that? That's what I, so it's just, you know, just a, another piece there.
Well, what comes to mind is I had this situation once. I was driving to a college. I had a class and I was at an intersection where people were getting off the interstate. And I was set to turn, and a truck driver decided to go through the light, but he didn't have enough time. So he blocked the entire intersection. And we were sort of parallel where I could see him, he could see me. And I made a gesture, which was not a very friendly gesture to him. And I saw him just kind of immediately erupt in his thing. And what immediately happened was, why did I do that? I've just created more suffering in the world. And I was acting from a low frequency place. And, and then I started, I'm like, I don't know what he's going through because there was also judgment involved.
Absolutely.
It's like, maybe he had a fight with his wife or something. Maybe he's worried about money, or maybe he's just not awake yet, fully awake. But I had acted out of judgment and I created a situation where I recognized that I was not acting out of the common good. I was not contributing to the goodness of all.
And I think that's such a beautiful piece of awareness, and thank you for that, because this work that we're discussing not only serves us individually, but it serves the collective, because the word oneness is all about that. It's about the collective energy of the love that's within us. This frequency is a field. This frequency of love within me, this frequency of love within you, this frequency of love that's within everybody listening is an actual field. And everything we do, everything we say, every thought we hold, which is frequency, informs the field. So when we are in low vibration, and we all are, any teacher that tells anyone listening, "I am so enlightened, I never experience judgment," run in the other direction. Because in my experience, they'd be off the planet. They'd be off the planet because they're so evolved. They have nothing else to learn here. This is our learning place. So everything we do, say, and experience is in the field. So I say to people when they come to me and they say, "Oh my God, Selena, this world is in such a horrible place. I want to contribute. What can I do?" This is what you do. You look at you. You learn how to walk in the world in awareness. You choose to shift your energy. You choose to go to higher vibration. And is this work? Yes, it is. And I am so clear about that. I have had so many people tell me, "Oh, you can't talk about what work it is." But it is. It's beautiful work. It's enlightening work. It's work that changes us, but it changes the field. So if you want to change the world, change your frequency. Because when you transform your frequency and you raise it and transform your life, you're transforming the field. And what your awareness is around this, Nick, is beautiful, because what you just shared in that moment was your awareness of where you polluted the field. And that didn't feel good to you as a person of consciousness. And I get it. And I pollute the field sometimes for nanoseconds because I see it and I change it and I transform it. And so I love the fact that this work not only changes our local world, but it changes the field. And we're putting in high vibration to the field. And that is not something to sneeze at. That is a very important aspect of this work.
Yeah, I appreciate that very much. And I just have to comment, I love when you noted that your, what's the, how do I want to say this, distrust perhaps of anyone who claims to be awakened or enlightened. One of my favorite quotes from Henry David Thoreau is, "I've never met a man who is quite awake. If I had, how could I look him in the face?" And I like the idea that this is a process. There's not a end state where you
Thank
go
you for
and,
that. Thank
are
you.
just like hanging out, like, yes, I'm awake and I'm enlightened and learn from me. It's
I
a
am the first,
process.
it is, and I love that you get that. I am so grateful to you for that, because for me, I am awakening. I am becoming enlightened. And I, which is why you see, I still work with my teacher every month. I'm on two calls a month with her, with other groups, as well as our one-on-one. She has become a friend. She has become a mentor, but she is first and foremost my teacher. I just had the joy of starting out my book tour in Minnesota, where my teacher is. And I did a book signing at Barnes and Noble in Minneapolis. Then I traveled down to her retreat center in Mankato. And I got to sit opposite from her and read the dedication in the book to her, eye to eye, with tears streaming down my face, because I was so grateful for that moment to tell her how grateful I was for everything I have learned from her and from her presence on this world. And she is so humble. She would absolutely love what you just said. She would back us up. She would be cheering us on. And she is such an enlightened being who still believes that she's got a lot more of enlightenment to experience. So, you know, yes, this is an on, and that This is what makes life on the planet so rich for me, because it is an ongoing practice. And it's why I'm not fearful. I'm not distrustful. I'm not angry about the difficulties that still come into my life. I'm like, bring them on. You know, it's like difficulty becomes an asset. I'm not asking for life to be difficult. Oh, no, there's a difference there. But I know that life on planet Earth has the possibility quite often to pinch, to be difficult. And so when that happens, I'm excited because I get to use it to transform even more within me. It means that I have an opportunity to grow even more.
Yeah, we all do.
Yes, we all do.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the things I love too is, and you've already kind of expressed this, but I just wanted to specifically state this sentence because you had this in the book. May I choose what is best for my highest good and the highest good for all.
Always.
Yeah.
Always, that's oneness. That's us being in the field of oneness. You know, and it's us accepting the responsibility for our place in the field and for our place here on earth and how what we do here on earth affects everyone. It also a beautiful teaching tool. Instead of something being good or bad, talking about the words in the book, those words in the book are there. Because before the book was a book, when it was simply a manuscript, it was called Monks Without Monasteries, How Ordinary People Live Extraordinary Lives. That's what Spirit gave to me. This book was given to me the first year of my brain injury. And I was so badly brain injured, I couldn't type. So I recorded into my phone for 4 years.
Wow.
Everything that was downloaded from source, because this is a channeled book. And then when I was able in year five to type consistently, I wrote it out. After 2 years of writing it out, I was moved to Woodstock, New York, and I found an editor within 3 days. That's why I was moved there. And before it was published, I took three groups of students through 10-month program. So there was 30 months that I worked with three groups of students, each 10 months, on the material. And we met every month. They would get the material. I would give a teaching on that chapter. They would go and use the material in their life. We'd come back and talk about it and support each other. And we'd go on to the next chapter. One of the students in my first group, a beautiful woman named Miliana, said, Selena, you know, we're talking about vibration and words. Can you put together a short list of words for us that we should be using now to replace other words? That's how that piece came about for the book. And when Inner Traditions picked up the book, fabulous publisher, to publish, I said, can we include this list of words? And they loved it. So that's how that came about. And words are so important. So we learn in this work not to use words like good or bad because they don't have relevance, but is it for my highest good and the highest good for all? So those words have a real specific meaning in this work because they take us out of conditioned words that were given, good or bad, which are judgments. And we even the words that help us to understand if we're doing something that is beneficial for us and for others, is this for my highest good, meaning my soul level? Because that's where we're responsible to. In this work, we're responsible and guided by our soul level. So is this action, is this word, is this thought, is this emotion for my highest good, on the highest octave, not in the third dimensional world? I may want that piece of cake, but is it for my highest good? Because I proclaimed I wasn't going to eat sugar. So this is a way of helping us to be in alignment with our commitments to our highest self and the highest good for all.
Yeah. One of the things that I found very interesting is, and this is something I've noticed elsewhere, is how when someone is connected and they are operating on that higher frequency, things seem to happen. You refer to synchronicities happening. Things that come to my mind are in Autobiography of a Yogi, Yogananda's book.
Yogananda, yep.
That things just like out of his faith, he was connected to that spirit, that things would happen. You know, he's like, I'm not worried about where my dinner comes from. It will be provided. And I have a friend who is deeply, deeply Christian, but operates on that same kind of thing, and things manifest for them. Yeah. And I saw that in the book, in what you were writing, that once you are put into that alignment, things happen.
You know, it's so, oof, it's so magnificent. When Source came into the car, when I was in the car and I was moving through the intersection, I heard a loud noise over my shoulder and I turned to look, and all I saw was a woman's face. And the next thing I knew, the car filled with tremendous light. And I thought I was dying. Mm. And so at that point, I said to the divine, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Because I've had a magnificent life. And I really have. I've had lots of tragedies and lots of amazing things. I've had a life filled with a lot of amazing things, far more than the tragedies. And I was ready to go. And when Spirit came through and channeled down and told me what was happening, in that moment, I surrendered. Mm. And what that meant, I realized later on, was that I no longer, and I to this day, I no longer sit and plan my life. I didn't from that moment on. I'm open to receiving, and I'm directed all the time. Now, sometimes people think divine direction just comes through as words. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it comes through somebody talking at you instead of a conversation. And if you know that that's a moment when Spirit is talking to you, you listen with different ears. So I am constantly directed by Source as to where I'm supposed to be, what I'm supposed to do. I'm in constant 24/7 alignment, like, these words that are coming out of me are coming through Source. And I, in that moment of being directed, Spirit moved me 8 times in 11 years. Mm-hmm. Somebody with a brain injury does not want to be moving 8 times in 11 years. But each time they moved me, I knew this was where I was supposed to be. And I went without question. And when I moved from my second apartment in New York, I had just signed a lease a week before I was directed to move to Woodstock through a most magnificent experience. And I did it. And 2 days into being in Woodstock, walking around, I walked into a woman's clothing store, and the woman behind the counter was a woman who had written a best-selling book on meditation. And she loved retail. She loved the store. Her book had been years ago, and now she was an editor for writers. And she became the editor for this book. Nancy Butler Ross was an extremely brilliant editor and became a very dear friend and was helpful in keeping me on the right path at times when I wasn't finding a publisher for 2 years. So Spirit constantly guides me. And the pieces that people call synchronicities are not synchronicities. These wonderful events for me, they're a product of being in alignment. So when these meetings and these happenings come through, I am notified and aware that I'm in constant alignment with the divine within me. Now, one of the areas of my life that was profoundly affected by my brain injury were my finances. I was making a ton of money. I had nothing saved because I had this plan. I had built up some short-term debt to keep my kids in their house and put them through college. And all of that was going to be alleviated within the first year of being in New York City. And it wasn't because of everything that happened. And so I had to make different decisions. And I was advised to claim bankruptcy, which I didn't want to do. It went against everything I knew. And within 3 or 4 years, it became clear that's what I had to do. And Spirit said, this is your plan. Just go with it because we have your back. And I did. And to this day, I am now building my nest egg. I have nothing in the bank. I have no shame around that. I have no problem talking about that. Spirit guides me. I never don't pay a bill. I have all the money I seem to need, and that's about it at this point in my life. And I have a great level of comfort with that. The few times I'm out of comfort with that, that's the only time. When the fear comes in, which it does once in a while, because I have no backup, and I look at that late at night, sometimes a little bit of fear comes in, I go through my practices and I shift it. And that's the only time I'm uncomfortable. And in the last 11 years of having absolutely nothing behind me, I've never missed a bill. And I've even rebuilt my credit. So I get that people say it's really hard. How can you have faith, Selena, when you've, you know, you probably have a lot of money in the bank, or you're a trust fund person or nothing. I'm being real clear here. I have faith. I have my source, my relationship with source, and I know that I do good work. And I know that at some point source is going to want me back in a place where I have a lot of financial abundance. In the meantime, I have abundance of every sort. I live in a beautiful apartment with a gorgeous pond. It's my backyard. Everywhere source has put me is the perfect place for my healing or living. So yes, I am connected to the divine, and the divine provides, which doesn't mean I don't work my tushy off, because I do, which doesn't mean I don't show up in the third dimensional world and put out an intention to source, because I do, but I put the intention out and I let go of it. And I have a relationship where I know spirit is going to come and fill my plate where it's supposed to be filled. And when my wishes and desires are not answered, I look to see, what am I to learn from that not being here? What piece am I still out of alignment with in my connection to source?
Yeah.
Well, so even that becomes work, which is good work. Yeah. It's all good work.
Yeah, it seems like trust is primary here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, trust. And also, I don't know if this is the best way to phrase this, but kind of overcoming fear. Fear seems to be one of the main blockages that manifest.
It's the block.
Yeah, that manifests in people in so many different ways.
Yeah, that's how we're constructed. Fear, you know, as a child, going back to that little infant, we have had two energy fields our entire life. One is the low energy of fear, and one is the high energy of love. They are the most paradoxical frequencies within us. Look at this planet. It's held together by paradoxical forces. We are a microcosm of the macrocosm of that which we live upon and live within. So once we understand how we function and how we move through this world in a holistic way, not in a conditioned way, then we get to see the brilliance of how we're created. It blows my effing mind how amazing it is that we come into this world with fear and love. And then we're given free will, which is our choice to choose fear or to choose love in any given situation. And our life up until this moment is a result of us choosing fear or love, because we don't create from fear. We only create from love. And so when we discover this and we learn these processes and we choose love over and over and over, we build faith. Faith and trust, they're hand in hand. Faith comes first. We have trust because we've built faith. We don't have faith because we have trust. Where does the trust come from? It comes from having the faith. When we don't have the experience in the third dimensional world that what we're believing is true, we trust, we give it a try. We choose to watch how we walk in the world. We choose to transform our frequencies. And then we have experiences that show us, oh, I do feel better from transforming. Well, look at that. In this moment of taking one of Selena's practices, in the moment of saying, oh, isn't that curious? I feel better. I feel open. So suddenly I have an experience that of trust, and that builds, you know, I have an experience in the faith of taking that practice on. I took it on. I felt better. I have an experience, and now I can trust. I took a piece of wisdom. I used it. Wisdom utilized over and over, or I'm sorry, knowledge experienced over and over, the knowledge that I can change my frequency. And when I use that, I become wise. And in that piece of wisdom used over and over, I have trust. So trust comes when we take the leap of faith.
Right. Have faith and the rest will follow.
Well, have faith and trust follows. Yeah. And the rest does follow. Absolutely.
That used to be a mantra of mine.
I love it.
And it just so seems, though, that right now in our particular moment, that I do see this option between kind of love and fear. And it's difficult in terms
Hey,
of the world, right?
take a look at our presidential candidates. I am not a political person, but it occurred to me today. I'm not going to go deeply into this, but I'm going to ask people just look at who may be our president on the Democratic side and who is already the Republican nominee. There, in my world, is no greater, starker expression of one who moves through fear and one who moves through love. And that is where we're at in this world. And it's not the United States, it's everywhere. We are being asked to choose dictators or to choose people who unite. We're asked to walk in the world welcoming people or turning them away. And there are a lot of third dimensional reasons for this, but the higher octave is working in the third dimensional all over the world. This is a pivotal time for all of us to be on the planet. Whatever side you are on, I know you are a being of love in your heart, in who you're meant to be, and that you're choosing for what you believe is the highest good for you and the highest good for all. So we are globally at a time vibrationally where our actions in our individual world were never more important.
No, I agree. I agree. Let me ask you this. I ask this frequently. Usually it is in connection to our environmental state, but I think just given the whole, do you have hope?
Oh, absolutely. I have so much hope. And let me share with you why. In 2012, I was living, it was way before my car event. I lived in Massachusetts. I was lecturing in New York every month. I was there for a lecture, and I noticed that one of the spiritual centers that no longer is there was having the elders from the Mayan tribe, 2012, because there was all this discussion around, oh my God, 2012, what's going to happen because of the Mayan prophecies. So I went. There were six people who showed up to sit with these six Mayan elders, and they were talking about how this was a time. They stated very categorically, very clearly, that 2012 was not a time to worry, that it was a time where there would be more consciousness on this planet than ever before. And I thought to myself that rung true because when I was a little girl, I lived on the eastern tip of Long Island. My dad's best friend was a man who lived in Massapequa, another town, and we saw them once a year. And you'd whisper, oh, he's a chiropractor, because a chiropractor back then was like a witch doctor. And so I'm sitting with the Mayan elders and I'm thinking, wow, years ago, we thought chiropractors were witch doctors, and now there's acupuncturists. This is 2012, not 2024, 12 years ago. But now you look, we have yoga studios on every corner. We have 24-hour meditation challenges online. We have advertising agencies using the words frequency, energy, and vibration in their ads. We have become a much more conscious, conscious society. And so spirit, so while I'm listening back then in 2012 to the Mayan elders and I'm thinking about this, I asked them a question and I said, well, are you saying that in 2012 and beyond, because we have this new consciousness on the planet, that there will be easier times ahead? Because we were starting to feel the pinch even in 2012, right, of what we're now experiencing in great detail in 2024. So I said, does that mean it's going to be easier? And they said, oh no. They said, think about a yin without a yang. You can't draw a yin without a yang. The more light there is, the more darkness there's going to be. You're headed into some very challenging times. However, because there are more beings of light, and you are a being of light, and we are beings of light, the beings of light are being called to be more diligent. We have to be more aware. We have to help and educate others to be beings of light so that we can can respond, not combat. I watch my words. We can respond to the increase in the dark with even more light. So I am so hopeful because I see more students coming to this work every day. I see podcast hosts like yourself and the work you do, Nick, coming and spreading the word. There are books on bestseller lists. There are people that are being tapped, you know, to step up, and they're doing the work. I think we are in the most hopeful time ever because consciousness is everywhere now. We've got this tool. We're not living in the days of the Holocaust where there was less awareness. We're in the world where people saying, don't forget about what happened back then. Be aware of what dictators look like early on. Be aware and show up. So I think this is an incredibly hopeful time.
Good. Yeah. Yeah, I do too. I do see a lot of fear, but I think people
tons.
have to process that and move through, you know? So yeah, I have hope too. I have hope too, but I
And
also
that's
agree. It's going to be a challenge.
right. We don't want to ignore what's happening. And I am not somebody who walks around with rose colored glasses. I want to see, I witness as I be, because I want to see my chaos. I want to shift that. And I notice it in the world. But my response to that is to come back. Not with some empty positive saying, but with an actual frequency, with podcasts, with the podcast interviews, with my own pond talks for people, sharing with people how they can transform the energy for themselves so we can actually use the difficulty as an opportunity to educate.
And I think we've got the tools now available that we can do this in a large scale, which is wonderful.
Well, I'm also hoping that my book, Raise Your Frequency, Transform Your Life, is one of those tools because it's a workbook. I want everyone to know this isn't a book you breeze through. This is a book to read through, mark your phrases, but go back and do the practices because it's a guide for you to work with.
Yeah, it is. And I think there's a lot of value in it, and I think it'll be very helpful.
Thank you,
So
Nick.
I know that we are nearing our end, so I have a couple of final questions for you. One is, what are you working on next? What's coming up for you?
Well, there's a lot coming up for me. I am currently working with the a community in San Diego, and we're doing it's a unity community in San Diego, and we're doing podcasts, once a month podcast teachings that take people through the work in the book and share this information as to how we can actually make this transformation. I'm starting a course with a group called Infinity out of the Midwest that will be starting in September, late September and October, on teaching the material in the work, in the book rather. I still do my one-on-one teachings, which I love. And if anybody listening is interested in learning how to do this work, you want to work with me, I would love to talk with you. Email me at selena@selenamaitreya.com. We'll set up a no fee time to discuss where you are in your path and what this work is about, to see if it's important, if this is the time for you to take it on. I have master classes I'm running. I have a Facebook group called A Leading from the Heart that you can join if you're a leader who wants to work from the heart. I have a YouTube channel where I post all my pond talks that people can access. So I'm out there quite a bit doing, I'm on a mission here, Nick, to really, Spirit has told me I'm on a mission. So if anybody listening is a leader or belongs to a spiritual community anywhere in the United States or the world, let me know, because I'm offering free all-day workshops to spiritual communities, absolutely free, so that they can put a price tag on it and they can share the information and they can have a fundraiser, which I just did in Minnesota. So I am willing to travel anywhere with no fee to share this with a community of spiritual people so people can go more in depth. And then I'm doing a tremendous number of book signings and book events through independent bookstores and Barnes and Noble all over the country.
Okay, wonderful. Do you have, you mentioned Facebook and YouTube. Do you have a website?
I do. I have a great website. Thank you for reminding me. It's called Practical Spirituality with Selena, and S-E-L-I-N-A. There, my whole book tour is listed there. The podcast, this one, this hour podcast with Nick, will be up as soon as he launches. I've got lots of pond talks there. And so that's another place that you can go for information. I appreciate that.
Okay, of course. Well, it seems like it's a nice central place to go for
It's a
people to
fabulous
get
place,
everything.
yes.
So what I will do is I will put the link for the website
Thank you.
and your book in the show notes in the video
Thank you
description
so
to
much. I
hopefully
appreciate
help
that.
people find your a little bit easier. Well, Selena, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. I've enjoyed the conversation and I applaud the work that you're doing. We
Thank you.
need healing. The world needs healing, and anyone that's engaged in that, I appreciate and I'm very grateful for.
Oh, thank you, Nick. And back at you, because you're reaching so many people with your podcast and you're giving us all a gift. And so it's been a pleasure for me to be here. I loved our conversation. And you were so kind to put up with my extended answers. But I'm also so grateful for the work that you do, bringing all of us, because energy, vibration, you're bringing this to so many people. So thank you as well.
No, thank you. I appreciate that. And that's a wrap on episode 153 of Rebel Spirit Radio. Thank you so much for listening or watching if you are part of my YouTube audience. If you would like to support my work here on Rebel Spirit Radio, and please support my work, and consider joining my Patreon, which has several perks for members, including early access to episodes, a book club, ad-free episodes. Trust me, I know how annoying those ads can be. There's also a private Facebook group, and you can get access to the Rebel Spirit Radio Discord server. I'll be honest, there are not too many other members at the moment, but I'm hoping that will change, and we can create a thriving community of rebel spirits. And of course, please share this with friends, family, coworkers, even, and on social media. Help me grow my audience. Also, please subscribe or follow the podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. I'm in the process of making some changes to improve the podcast and the YouTube channel. I'm planning on hosting some more live streams. I've got a few other projects in the works, and I'd also like to create some educational videos as well. It's slow going, but your support will help me speed up the process and ensure that I can continue with the podcast and offer much more content than what I provide now. As I always like to say, I'm here in the front range doing missionary work in regards to religion, spirituality and ecology, consciousness and psychedelics, the esoteric, and how all of this can help us heal humanity's relationship with the sacred earth. So if you feel moved by the rebel spirit, and I sure hope that you do, then please, by all means, help me in my efforts to share the good news. I'm Nick Mather, and you've been listening to or watching Rebel Spirit Radio. Until next time, may you be in peace. May you flourish in all possible ways, and may you continue to nurture your rebel spirit.